Well, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for keeping us entertained this afternoon. It is Thursday, the 22nd of September. I am Shane Dawson, and you are listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Bernard Jackman is in studio as Leo Cullen responds to reports of Stuart Lancaster exit from Leinster.
The group is always evolving. That's the way I look at it. So, we'll see. We have, again, as in, we're commenting on speculation, so it's hard to give you any sort of accurate reports or anything. But, we'll see how it plays out over the next little while.
In Gaelic games, Damien Lawler walks us through a new fixture calendar being considered by the GAA. And another RTE pundit takes over at inter-county level.
Hey, what's the story with all these RTE guys heading off? That's the question. What are you doing today? Everyone's starting to ask the question. Is it the podcast? That's all I want to know.
The RTE exodus continues. In Golf for Life, the Women's Irish Open at Tremorlin Castle, Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America and will be live to the recently saved Tolka Park ahead of Shelburne versus Shamrock Rovers. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us at 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Good evening. It is great to have your company here live on 2FM as you listen to Game On. And I'm in the company of Bernard Jackman. Bernard, how are you, sir?
Good, thanks, Shane.
Very good, very good. Bernard, before we chat rugby, just a roundup of the World Rowing Championships to give. Paula Donovan and Fintan McCarthy remain on course to retain their lightweight double sculls world title after winning another winning performance at the World Rowing Championships in the Czech Republic. Four Irish crews booked their passage through to A finals this morning as O'Donovan and McCarthy again stamped their class in proceedings. Their final takes place just after 20 past one on Saturday. Aoife Casey and Margaret Cremin put in a fine showing to progress to the final of the women's lightweight double sculls. Also through to an A final is the women's four of Afrikyo, Emer Lam, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty, who were second throughout their race, finishing just under 2 seconds behind Britain to advance to Saturday's final. In the mixed double sculls, Katie O'Brien and Stephen McGowan booked the place in the A final by finishing second behind Uzbekistan. Lydia Heffey failed to progress from the lightweight single sculls AB semi-finals and will take her place in the B final, while Natalie Long and Tara Hanlon claimed a fifth place finish in the women's pair semi-final and will compete in the B final. The men's four of Jack Dorney, Nathan Timoney, Ross Corrigan and John Kearney were edged out of a place in the A final when they were pipped for third position by Switzerland. Of course, you can see live coverage of the World Rowing Championships on the RTE Player on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and also live on RTE One television on Saturday. Just to continue our build-up to the big football match on Saturday, Ireland, of course, away against Scotland in the UEFA Nations League. And listeners yesterday may have heard myself and David Snaid talk about club form benefiting an international call-up, but also international playing time and performances benefiting players at club level. And that's exactly what Tony O'Donoghue was talking to Matt Doherty about this week on media duty. Matt was in the build-up to that big one.
Matt, I have a particular interest as a Spurs fan as well. Is it frustrating for you, though, particularly last season, you found form, you persuaded Conte that you were the right man for that position before the injury?
Yeah, look, no, I'm not frustrated. Like, I understand where the manager was coming from in terms of where he thought my fitness was, and he was right at the end of the day. So, look, I know that he trusts me. I know that once I'm back fit again, he knows what I can do for him. And once he thinks I'm available, I'm sure he'll give me a bit more time.
Has he told you he'd like you to get minutes in this international window?
Yeah, it's exactly what he said. He wanted me to come away and try to get two games in. He kind of said in his press conference that I'd be available after the international break fully for selection, so that's kind of the plan if Stephen obeys him.
So that's Tony O'Donoghue, the Cork City and Tottenham Hotspur fan, chatting to the former Bohemians and Tottenham Hotspur player Matt Doherty. Of course, you can watch live coverage of Scotland versus the Republic of Ireland on RTE2 and the RTE Player, or listen to national radio commentary on RTE Radio 1. And on Tuesday, Ireland take on Armenia, and you can listen to a very special Game On for commentary and analysis of that one. So lots to come in the world of association football. However, Bernard Jackman is here to chat rugby football, and Bernard, our first port of call is the speculation surrounding Stuart Lancaster's future on whether or not he will be leaving Leinster to join Top 14 team Racing 92. Before we hear from Leo Cullen, which way is the wind blowing from your rugby circles? Do you think this is a done deal?
I don't know if it's a done deal, but if Racing have identified him as the next head coach, they have the financial wherewithal to make him an offer that's, you know, it would be very hard to compete with. Plus, you know, it'd be understandable if he wants a new challenge. He's been in Ireland 6-7 years. He commuted from Leeds at the start of that. The top 14 is a monster. Racing have a very good squad and have the budget to get even better players. They're apparently talking to Richie Mwanga for next year. When Jackie Lorenzetti, the billionaire owner, wants something, he generally gets it. And the rumour has been that Stuart Lancaster has been his target for a while. He's off contract. I suppose when you see that he didn't have to do media today, that shows you the beauty of having someone like Leo above him, you know, that can just buffer it, so he didn't have to comment on it, and he rarely does media. And yeah, the word is that Racing want him. It'll be interesting if Leinster can make him a counter offer, or does he want to be the head man? Does he want to be, you know, to be totally in charge of the project, which Racing would allow him to do? The current trainer there, Lauren Travers, is apparently moving up to be president, and Jackie Lorenzetti takes a step back, but it's going to continue to write the checks, which is what's very important. So I think the next week or two, Leinster very rarely get caught in a media storm around recruitment retention. They normally do their business quietly. So I would imagine if it is a done deal, you know, there'll be a statement pretty soon, and then it'll be all about maximising this season, getting the most out of the end of Stuart Lancaster, if that's what's going to be.
Okay, well, you mentioned Leo Cullen, or that you mentioned Stuart Lancaster didn't do media. Leo Cullen was up doing the pre-match press conference ahead of Leinster's match against Benetton tomorrow evening in the RDS. So Leo Cullen had to respond to the Lancaster reports and a few other news headlines.
Has there been less drama in the build-up to this weekend's game than there was for you personally in the build-up to last weekend's game?
Yeah, we were touching on it, yeah. That's at the start of the week. I wasn't sure that I was going to get to Italy myself. I had my laptop bag was taken out of my house, so with my laptop and lots of my work notes and possessions, and my passport unfortunately was in the bag as well, so I was scrambling around. But no, credit to the lads, they were able to run the week pretty well themselves. And as I said, we got the job done, which is great.
And just before we leave this, can I ask you about the speculation regarding Stuart Lancaster? His name is up in lights in terms of, you know, newspaper articles here in Ireland, indeed in France as well. A lot of speculation that he could be leaving Leinster at the end of the season to take up another offer.
Yeah, like I think the reality is there's always going to be that level of speculation that as you touch on, with some of our talent. You know, when I talk about talent, it's coaching, backroom, and playing talent. And you know, there's lots of these different conversations going on in the background. And yeah, like Stuart is one of those people that is up for negotiation at the end of next season, at the end of this season, so as we lead into the following season. So yeah, we'll see how it plays out over the next little while.
It's that time of the year though, isn't it? Whether it's regardless, whether it's a coach or a player or anything like that, quality talent attracts quality looks from other places.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Well, it's a positive thing, so you would hope. I'm sure there's a few other teams out there that they don't have those, I guess, prying eyes on them. But, you know, I think that's a credit to everything that's gone on here over the last number of years. So, been plenty of success with the team, a lot of success in terms of some of the individuals, in terms of players in particular, that have gone on to achieve even at international level as well. So, you know, we're lucky that we've got some great people in the coaching group. You know, we had a bit of transition already off the back of towards the end of last season with Felipe moving to Argentina, which has given again new voice into the group with Andrew Goodman coming in. Dennis Leamy has gone, returned back to Munster, and Sean O'Brien, you know, has stepped into the breach there. And you know, the two lads that have joined us have been great. So the group is always evolving. That's the way I look at it. So yeah, we'll see. We have, again, as in, we're commenting on speculation, so it's hard to give you any sort of accurate reports and anything. But yeah, we'll see how it plays out over the next little while.
So it's interesting, Leo Cullen mentioned there, and I genuinely feel, you mentioned how well Leinster's communication department is managed and has been for years. I feel Leinster Rugby HQ could be burning down and Leo Cullen would still be the most cool and composed man and just give his little customary chuckle and a nice, really composed answer there. But when you listen to the comments on Kantapome leaving and Leamy leaving, I know they've brought in very adequate replacements as well, but this will cause a headache for Leo, for Leinster, and also new CEO Shane Nolan taking over from Mick Dawson, who has been there for so long and overseen so much success.
Absolutely, and what Leinster have had is consistency of people in role. So Mick Dawson there 20 odd years, Leo Cullen, you know, been there all his life bar 2 years in Leicester as a player and a coach, and they've got great stability out of Stewart as well. You know, 6-7 years is unheard of for a head coach. So even if Stewart left, you know, Andrew Goodman, Robin McBride, Sean O'Brien would be a year into role. Leo would I'm sure stay. If they are going to make a change, or if a change is going to be forced upon them, having 7 or 8 months to scour the world, and also it's kind of like when Johan van Gran left Munster. The biggest issue was the timing of it. It was a year out from a World Cup, so most coaches were under contract. So Leinster, with the coaches that they have, could effectively wait till after the World Cup for the right man as well. You know, Leo and Andrew Goodman and Rob McBride, etc., could easily mind that group for the pre-season, particularly because so many players are going to be gone to the World Cup. So they would have the best possible choice they're going to have over the next 4 years. So that's the only advantage. I'm not saying it would be positive if Stewart left, but if you know early enough and it's a World Cup year, there's a lot more coaching on the market than there was 6-7 months ago.
And Leo's contract is till the summer of 2023. He only signed the short term extension, so it would be interesting to see if he does remain there, or if he does step up to, say, a director of rugby role and the new structure comes in. In terms of Stewart Lancaster's reputation, because he's been hugely popular since arriving, you mentioned there, I think September 2016, and then Leinster win the Pro 14 European Dublin 2018, three more domestic titles then follow, and Lancaster helped the province reach two other Champions Cup deciders. So, you know, his reputation has skyrocketed while at Leinster, because he was coming in after being sacked by England after their 2015 pool stage exit in the World Cup, albeit he'd done excellent work in the lead up to there. So he really, it wasn't a case of reputation was shattered or anything like that. He was still a very respected coach, but what he's achieved here has been phenomenel.
Yeah, and he came into Leinster at a low ebb. They only won one out of their six group games in Europe that year. They lost to Connacht in a Pro 14 final. And it has been a remarkable improvement. The players really rate him. You know, they believe in his philosophy, how to play. There's a lot of similarities between what Stewart started in Leinster to what Ireland do now. The only black mark would be not being able to significantly add to those European Cups. So, you know, Joe Schmidt won a couple, Stewart won one, to be fair, but I think they will have regrets over the last couple of years not being able to get over that hurdle when you see the quality of players they have. But in terms of consistency, I think they're probably the most consistent team in Europe. They just have been unable to get over the final hurdle in Europe, and obviously finishing last season without any silverware will leave a sour taste. So I'm excited to see how they bounce back. They weren't great against Zebra the other day, but I think that was a pre-season game, and you've seen the squad they picked for tomorrow night against Benetton. All the frontliners are starting to come back in. Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henshaw, Caelan Doris, Josh van der Fleer, etc. The really interesting one is Kieran Frawley at 10. You know, he's going to be gone for the next couple of weeks with that emerging Ireland team to South Africa. He hasn't got a huge amount of game time at 10 because Leinster are using him as a second playmaker in the centre, and he's been brilliant. But it's just interesting that he's getting that shot tomorrow night.
This is, I think, he's been handed the number 10 jersey for a second start at out half in more than two years. So yeah, that really kind of says it all. Is out half Kieran Frawley's position going forward? Like, by all accounts, if he's going over to the Irish emerging talent as a fly half and now he's been named here, you would assume that's the case.
Look, I think we all know that he gives Ireland and Leinster a different option as a ball-playing centre. If he can show that he has the materials to be a quality backup 10, right? Because realistically, it's going to be hard to see him passing out Joey Carberry. You know, the pecking order for the World Cup injuries aside, would be Johnny Sexton, Joey Carberry and Ian Utter. Frawley now has a chance because he plays tomorrow night. He goes in the Emerging Ireland Tour. He did well in New Zealand against the New Zealand Maoris. Obviously, Harry Byrne was probably selected ahead of him to play 10 there but got injured. He might have the momentum. And him being able to play 10, he'll be an invaluable utility player in that World Cup squad to France. And then obviously, when Johnny eventually retires, and there's no rush on that, now then he maybe starts for Leinster at 10 and has a chance to go toe-to-toe with Joey Carberry or whoever else is playing around the country. So I think the next couple of weeks for him are absolutely crucial.
Does he have the potential at this position to realistically be the Leinster number 10 when Johnny retires for the foreseeable? And also, in terms of another at the moment then as well, I'm aware Journalistic 101 don't ask two questions, but I am.
Yeah.
Who is the third choice at the moment?
I think it's Frawley. I think he's jumped up in the pecking order. I think Harry Byrne was being brought to New Zealand for that chance. He was very unlucky. Ross Byrne seems to be, despite being very consistent for Leinster, doesn't seem to be the type of 10 that Mike Catt and Andy Farrell want, so it's hard to see him getting back in. Ben Healy, will he get enough big games for Munster? Probably not if Joey Carberry stays fit. So Frawley, even though he's not going to be first choice for Leinster, he may now get fast-tracked to be the backup to Johnny and also play games alongside Johnny sometimes as a 12. And I think he's now in pole position, to be honest. And he has talent. Unfortunately for him, a lot of his opportunities have been at 12. Now we're going to have to see if he can do it at 10.
Well, it will be interesting to see Leinster hosting Benetton in the RDS. Bernard Jack, I'm going to put you on the spot. If I say happy 15-year anniversary to Leinster Rugby, does it mean anything to you?
Not a thing, no.
No. It's 15 years since Leinster played their first match in the RDS. Win over Edinburgh, of which you were part of.
Okay, well, yeah, I remember playing the RDS and I loved it. I also remember playing in Donnybrook.
Can you remember who your front row was? Because I will admit, I am a big fan of lesser-known provincial players. And I have to say, the number three for Leinster, I will hold my hand up and admit, I actually haven't heard of him.
Stephen Knoop?
No. So, yeah, Stan Wright
yeah,
was
a good friend of mine.
Ivra Hain.
Yeah.
Bernard Jackman, Ivra though. Juan Francisco Gomez.
Gomez, a large Argentinian, hilarious guy. I remember we did Hills in... So he's a veterinary student, very unfit, came to Leinster for that pre-season, and we were doing hill running in Killiney, and we had to do 15 of these like long runs up the hills. And I remember after the third run, he was just sitting on the long grass halfway up. And I said, Juan, come on. He goes, no, impossible, whatever. So he actually, would you believe, he won a Magnus League with us. He won a top 14 in Stade Francais. He won a championship in Leeds. He kept going places as kind of medical jokers.
Okay.
And wherever he went, he just for about three seasons, he won trophies, but without ever really playing, you know. But okay. Lovely guy, and a great crack, but it didn't really work out for him, no.
Okay, well, yeah, no, I wasn't aware he played for Leinster. You lasted 67 minutes before being replaced by Blaney.
That's longer than it normally lasted.
That was 15 years ago. So yeah, as we mentioned, Leinster are hosting Benetton after a sluggish round one victory, but it's still a bonus point round one victory and a lot of big names back for Leinster tomorrow evening. So Stuart Lancaster to France may or may not happen, but one man over in France and well settled is Ronan O'Gara, the La Rochelle director of rugby, and he will be watching his side from the stands for the next 6 weeks after being found guilty of disrespecting the authority of a match official during a recent game. The legendary former Munster and Ireland out half was hauled before officials after his side's 23-20 win over Lyon 2 weeks ago, and will have his matchday role curtailed in the coming weeks after being found to have offended on the higher degree of the scale of gravity, according to the top 14 organisers. They mentioned, after taking into account the aggravating circumstance, i.e. his disciplinary record, the penalty was increased by 2 weeks, a statement read, after taking into account the mitigating factors, acknowledging that Ronan acknowledged guilt, conduct before and during the hearing, the sanction was reduced by 2 weeks. So a lot made out of that. But Ronan will continue to be a fiery character, I suspect.
Yeah, and look, you know what? In France, it's seen as a positive for the head coach to be in that exclusion zone, on the sideline, animated. They call it the spectacle, like the spectacle. And the crowd feed off the coaches who... admonished a referee who kind of challenged their players. It's unbelievable. It's like a show. And some do it more than others. Now, unfortunately for Ronan, he's obviously overstepped the mark, and he got involved with officials. And there was a couple of incidents last year. But I think Ronan is an incredibly competitive person, and he'll do whatever it takes to win. And if that means, you know, showing his players his displeasure, backing his players against officials, he seems to have no problem doing that. And you know, there's a rumor that he entered the referee's dressing room at halftime in the Champions Cup final between Leinster and Arashel to give Wayne Barnes an earful. Yeah. But look, he's now got fined suspended a couple of times. It won't really affect him because, you know, he'll actually go where the Stuart Lancaster goes. He'll go into the coaching box and have access to video, and he'll be mic'd up, etc. But definitely in France, being that head coach with your armband on, you're expected to play to the crowd a little bit, and some guys push it to the very limit, some guys get caught. Unfortunately, this time he got caught.
Okay, well, it might suit Ronan O'Gara going forward, and certainly instilling that siege mentality with La Rochelle. English club rugby, Bernard, it is reeling after it was revealed that Wasps have joined Worcester in fighting for their survival amid the threat of administration, just hours after Worcester's owners were set the deadline of 5 p.m. on Monday to prove they were able to lift Six Ways out of crisis or face suspension from all competitions. Wasps filed a notice of their intention to appoint administrator with the British High Court. I mean, at one stage Wasps were being touted as becoming the richest club in the world. What is going on in English club rugby?
Yeah, so when Wasps did that deal to go to Coventry and sold that bond, the PR was, this is the way forward, this is what everyone should be doing. But it's gone horribly wrong. They haven't been able to refinance the bond. The crowds haven't came. The convention centre part of the stadium hasn't been as busy as they thought. And all the spotlight's been on Worcester for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and some of the stories coming out of there have been horrendous. Players late getting paid, staff only getting paid 65%, some haven't been paid at all, no insurance. They look like they're a basket case. And Wasps, you know, came out of nowhere yesterday in that they'd been out of the limelight, and it seems that they're in a huge battle with the revenue to pay unpaid taxes, which doesn't look good. And given the fact that, you know, Worcester's struggling to find an owner. Worcester, obviously a historic club. We all remember them playing in the European Cup, winning European Cups with Warren Gatland. But they were London-based. They moved to Coventry and they just haven't been able to grow the following. And even though the salary cap is reduced in England, the money's not there to pay them. Mm. At the moment, the only thing keeping the game going is the international game. And if you look at the Irish model, you know, the provinces, even though they're healthy support and good sponsorship, it's the international game that funds them. And I'd be very worried about the future of English club rugby. France is a little bit different. Their TV money is better. They've got way more sponsors at local level. And it's a proper established professional sport over there. And also there's more sugar daddies interested in getting involved. In England now, you know, Worcester haven't really been able, there's talk of a consortium, but there's not five or six people out there willing to sign a cheque for 2 or 3 million a year for the ego boost of having a rugby club. And if they're not there, they don't wash their face, you know. So it's there's a big adjustment going to happen in rugby in terms of player contracts, in terms of squad size, staff contracts, and it's happening very quickly, and it's going to be a big reset.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, both clubs are being pursued for unpaid tax and have been served with winding up orders by Britain's revenue commissioners, raising the very real prospect that the top flight in England could be reduced from 13 to 11 clubs within a matter of weeks. Bernard Jackman, that certainly is a developing story. I'm sure we'll be chatting more on that in due course. But from Michael Corcoran chatting to Leo Cullen, from Bernard Jackman regaling us tales of Juan Francisco Gomez and French and English rugby, I think we've all bases covered from the rugby side of things. We'll be chatting GA next with Damien Lawler.
Game on.
GAA.
Now, I am delighted to say that RTE GA reporter Damien Lawler joins me now, because there is a lot of Gaelic Games stories to get through, a couple of managerial appointments and potential appointments to discuss. But first, Damien, the evolution of the split season and the facilitation of the new Round Robin Football Championship is clear to see in the proposed 2023 fixtures draft that the GA Central Council will consider this weekend. There's a few headlines in this fixture list that may raise a few eyebrows. Talk us through this proposal, Damien.
Yeah, Shane. I think people
you know, we're waiting to see how the split season would go, and I think they will still be waiting maybe in another year's time, because it is quite condensed, it is quite intense. The club gets a huge window, and Intercounty gets a window as well, but you've a lot to pack in. So this weekend now, the GAA Central Council will be asked to consider leaving aside the four football National League finals. This is because of time pressure from an expanded championship programme that has round-robin competitions as well. So not having league finals would give a clear two-week break between the end of the relegation group games and the start of the provincial championship series. The provincial championship has to start a bit earlier, a good bit earlier, because you've got a round-robin structure then to come on after that in both the Tailteann Cup and the Sam Maguire competitions. They'll play over three weekends. So these are all proposals, these are all suggestions, but Central Council will have to rule on them this weekend. So the first headline will be that there will be no four football league finals in 2023 because of time pressure. That's the first suggestion. There will be a hurling league final because it's a different competition and it'll be run off a lot more compact. There is another headline in the making here, Shane, in that Munster and Leinster senior hurling finals look like they could be played on the same day next year. Could be maybe a leading fixture for Leinster and a daytime fixture for Munster. So that certainly causes a few raised eyebrows as well. They are all part of a kind of a template that will see round robin taking place over three weekends starting in the middle of May. I think another landmark kind of event is the season is going back from 30 weeks to 31 weeks. Now, people will say that's not a big deal, but I think it's all part of the evolution of the split season. I think we're going back from July the 23rd to July the 30th. It wouldn't be a big surprise to me, saying over the next 2 years if we veer into the first 2 weeks in August territory. So there's a lot going on. The Joe McDonagh Cup final was traditionally played as a curtain raiser to the Leinster final, but because that game requires a live broadcast, it will now clash with the Munster hurling final on the same day, and you'll probably have it now as a curtain raiser to an under-20 All-Ireland hurling final as well. So there's an awful lot more going around. You also have to factor in Fitzgibbon Cup, which is planned for February the 18th and 19th. You have to factor in Congress, which will make a big decision maybe on the minor and under-19 grades, I'm led to believe. And you also have to factor in a very competitive Sigerson Cup as well as under-20 competition. So there's an awful lot to get through in 31 weeks, Shane. The season will begin in week two next year with club action. It'll end in week 51 with club action. And in between all of that, you'll have Allianz League, provincial championships, round-robin competition, the All-Ireland Series. You'll have college games, bowl codes. You'll have All-Ireland under 17 and All-Ireland under 20 in bowl codes as well. And then you go back into your club action. So very concise, very precise, and there is a request going in this weekend to push it back by a week, stop the league finals to alleviate a bit of time pressure.
Okay, well, that is very well explained, to be fair. And if anyone does want to have a read of it on the RT Sport website, you have a good article on there as well, Damien, that kind of lays everything out. I suppose just to dive a bit further into detail, the CCC will again request a deviation of rule 6.31 to allow for the All-Ireland football final to be played on the 31st weekend of the year, not the 30th weekend, as the rule prescribes. That would have the effect of extending the championship by 1 week, with the final scheduled for Sunday, July 30th, according to the proposed draft. Which way is the wind blowing? Like, are these motions that will just be passed, or will there be a lot of debate over these?
There will be a debate from hurling purists. Why would you have your competition is done so early in the year, and then why would you have the two showpieces on the same day? You know, obviously only a certain amount of hurling counties can win the Liam McCarthy Cup, Shane. It's not like the football, although in football only a certain few can win it as well, to be fair. There'll also be an argument too that, like, what about Division 3 and Division 4 and even Division 2? Those counties love the big day out, and they love to go to Croke Park, and it's not often they got there. And you have counties in recent years, like, say, Westmeath, Monaghan, and Tipperary, Sligo, you know, they all got to allow, they all got to play in league finals. Not so much Sligo for quite a while, but the general point still stands. So why would you deny counties? So I think there'll be a bit of debate about that. However, if you're being honest about it, in many, many circumstances and instances over the past few seasons, teams that got to a league final were facing a hard shoulder with the championship starting only a week or two later anyway. And oftentimes, league finals were not given the exact priority that they should have got. And you saw teams maybe get off to a great start in the league. It looked like they might get to the finals, and then they nearly almost put the handbrake on because their attention was 3 or 4 weeks after the league final, on 2 weeks after the league final on the championship fixture. So I do expect them to get through. I think a lot of work has gone ahead on this. Don't forget, we're after stripping the season back maybe from, back to what, 30, 31 weeks. It would have been maybe 38 weeks. So huge, huge work gone into that. And I do feel, in my own personal opinion, we'll go back another 2 or 3 weeks over the next 2 or 3 years. We might not be far off the ideal scenario then, Shane, to be honest with you, because at the moment, it looks like your inter-county setup can go ahead. Looks like players can get a break. A lot of them went away to the States during the teams were knocked out early. But you come back and play for your club then. So you get to travel, you get the wanderlust out of your system, you get to play for your county, you get a break, and you give the club full pelt as well. So I think split season is fundamentally a good concept. A little bit squeezed at the moment, but I don't think you can go another 4 or 5 weeks back. I think you'll go another 2 or 3, and that could be a happy compromise by around 2025, if we're all still alive for this year.
Oh, please God. Well, okay. Well, it will be interesting to see what comes of the GAA Central Council meeting this weekend. And you mentioned hurling purists. You know, there might also be changes to the hurling league schedule with a 3 week break after the first three rounds to avoid clashes with the Fitzgibbon Cup final played February 18th, 19th, and Congress on February 25th, 26th. However, I did mention managerial noise because Desi Dolan is the new Westmead boss. And before I get your thoughts, the man himself was speaking a little bit earlier today to the RTGA podcast.
Getting involved last year with Jack Cooney, I suppose I got on very well with the lads. I hadn't played since maybe 2014 inter-county, and then getting back involved with Westmead, I probably realised that the enjoyment and the satisfaction I was getting involved with being in a team and the inter-county environment and getting stuck into it. And having the good year that we had with Jack and working with Jack and Jack as a mentor was very enjoyable. And I suppose I was as surprised as anyone when I got the news that Jack had to leave the job. So I suppose the opportunity presented itself. The players were probably keen to have a bit of continuity. So I suppose I stepped up to the role as a result of that. But I'm kind of confident in so far as I have a lot of good people around me in Westmead. And I'm obviously best mates with John Kane for a very, very long time. And he's a great coach and experienced. The S&C guys are amazing. And the whole backroom team. And I suppose that's really probably the reason I'm doing it, is because the continuity is a big factor. A couple of players, maybe 30, 31, 32, and I think give them another opportunity to go on, push on, seeking what we can achieve in Westmead.
So Desi Dolan's first managerial gig is the Westmead inter-county job, and Jack Cooney stepping aside after 4 years in a job that yielded a Division 3 title and the inaugural Tailteann Cup. So it's certainly going to be a tough act to follow.
Yeah, tough act to follow, but it's good that the lads are sticking around to do it. John Keane, like, they're only two-time All-Star, and Desi's probably the greatest ever player, so it's fairly illustrious company, and a lot of the backroom team are staying on as well. Look, it's a no-brainer, really, and it's a no-brainer to keep John Keane and keep the backroom team with him. He'd probably bring in another vice or two as well, just to freshen it up, but nobody would have seen Jack Cooney going, but he's very much involved in the academic, holistic side of coaching as well, and that's landed in a job in Croke Park full-time. The rules stipulated he couldn't hold a position in Croke Park and an inter-county senior managerial spot at the same time. Desi is the obvious replacement. It's not the end of the managerial news yet either, by the way.
So Monaghan, you were reporting that they were in a position to unveil a new senior football management team by next week. Is that still the case?
And my first line in the story was by the end of this week, and then I did a bit of research and it showed that most of their county board meetings were on Monday, so I figured it would be next Monday night. And then the moment I wrote that down, of course, they came out and said we're having a county board meeting tonight, Thursday night. So
just keeping you on your toes, Damo. Keeping you on your toes.
God. it's hard, but somebody has to be kept on their toes. It's usually me. I think we'll know tonight, but without nailing my colours firmly in the mast, all indications are it is Vinnie Corey. It's been a fairly drawn-out process, Shane, and two or three of your county men, J.O. and Jared Brennan,
yeah,
were linked with the job, and linked heavily, but it does appear now, Shane, that Vinnie Corey and a band of former players, Martin Corey, who was coaching Cavan right up to this year, Owen Lennon's been involved as well in the past, and Paul Finney has had coaching experience at different levels too. So, you know, you're getting a great bunch of lads there, really.
Damien Lawler, gentlemen, as always, really appreciate you taking the call.
Game on.
Football.
Now, as Raf Diallo on the RT Sport website put so elegantly for two sides involved in FAI Cup quarterfinal action on Sunday, the emotions at full time couldn't have been more contrasting. While Shelburne ended a run of poor results by thrashing neighbours Bohemians 3-0 and moving a step closer to a dream decider, Shamrock Rovers' extra time defeat at Derry City means their focus will solely be on the League of Ireland title defence and the remaining UEFA Europa Conference League group games. And Shelburne versus Shamrock Rovers kicks off at 7:45 p.m. in the iconic, historic, the Talca Park Stadium that ushers in the attitude of retro is beautiful. And John Kenny is there live for us. And John, given the packed schedule and the distances covered over the last fortnight, extra time up at the Brandywell was far from ideal for Stephen Bradley's side. Even with the advantage of the deepest squad in the league, what response should we expect from the Hoops in Talca Park tonight?
Well, having decided to play through that international break, the games now really coming thick and fast indeed. Losses for Shamrock Rovers, beaten by Ghent in Europe last week. The Hoops tumbled out of the FAI Cup, as you mentioned, the quarterfinal stage, to Derry City last Sunday. They've now conceded 6 goals in the last 2 games, so mini crisis, maybe. Well, tonight they face Shells, who you mentioned, beat Bowes comfortably 3-0 in the cup, with the Hoops all boy Sean Boyd scoring twice. And Boyd, also the 24-year-old, signed an extended contract this week at Shells. He'll be raring to get one over on his old side tonight. Rovers, and without a couple of players as well, Lee Grace sent off against Derby City. He's out suspended. Andy Lyons and Justin Farijaj are with the Irish under 21 squad to play Israel tomorrow in Tala in the first leg of that Europa under 21 playoff, or UEFA under 21 playoff, tomorrow night at Tala at 7 o'clock. Rovers, though, do have the better of the results between these two sides this season in the league, winning both previous league games. Shells tonight will also be looking to arrest a run of 5 league games. Without a win, and indeed Shells haven't beaten Rovers here in Talca in the league since 2004, but they got that win against Bowes and they come into this game with their heads held high. Big crowd is expected for the meeting of these two great Dublin rivals, and we kick off here, Shane, at 7:45.
Absolutely, should be a great occasion down in Talca Park. John, I've asked this question to numerous contributors on the show, but do you reckon we do have a genuine title race on our hands, or given Rovers' games in hand, that it's not quite as close as people might believe it is?
I think the only really anyone looking to give Rovers a run, it would be Derry City, I would think. But we have seen in the past the likes of Dundalk, you know, especially in particular Dundalk, how they've they lost 3-0 at Shamrock Rovers. They obviously got that 3-0 result given to them to get the 3 points against Sligo Rovers, but they were very disappointing in that cup match over the weekend, and I think they're on a slide at the moment. So if it's going to be a title race, it'll be against Derry City, but I still think the Shamrock Rovers have this in their own hands, and they'd be very, very surprised if they lost it at this particular juncture. But the games are piling up thick and fast. They decided, as we mentioned at the top there, to go through the international break, so they lost a couple of players, the likes of Andy Lyons, who would probably be playing tonight, and Justin Farijaj, who's normally gets a game or run as substitutes at some stages during the game, the young fella. But Lee Grace is out of the heart of the defence tonight as well. So Shells, having won that match on last Sunday here against Bohemians, well, they might fancy a little upset here tonight.
Hopefully, John. JK, thank you very much. Live from Talca Park, John Kenny will have updates across RT Radio throughout the course of this evening, and a full match report a little bit later on, as Shelburne, now safe from relegation and unlikely to be reaching the highs of European football this year, will hopefully keep ticking over, because that Cup semi-final against Waterford is just 25 days away. But from Association Football to American Football, Jeff Shepherd joins us now. Shep, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Shane. How are things in your world?
Oh, things are wonderful. My beloved Shelburne win on Sunday, and my beloved Jets. I mean, I was chatting to our American football expert, our broadcast coordinator, Laura Lee Davis, who reliably informs me. I mean, my Jets are 1-1 now, the exact same as the Super Bowl champions. I mean, I called it.
I mean, you were at the very front of that bandwagon, right? I mean, no, I mean, look, Shane, they're losing 30-17 with like 2 minutes to go in the game, and they're playing in Cleveland. And then basically everything that you need to have happen to come back for, you know, in a situation like that, it happens for them. They get the ball, they throw a 66-yard touchdown pass, and the defenders kind of just leave the receiver wide open, so they score a touchdown. And then they get the onside kick, and then they drive right down the field and score another touchdown, and they make their extra point, and boom. I saw a great line. They scored two touchdowns in 60 seconds, and, you know, they're the New York Jets. It was a New York minute is what they did it in. And,
oh, I'm loving it.
Yeah, and they beat Cleveland and kind of stunned the Browns and their fans. And what's interesting, you know, we talked about how veteran quarterback Joe Flacco is playing for the Jets while Zach Wilson's injured. You know, before Joe Flacco was with New York, he was with the Baltimore Ravens, and they dominated the division. Dominated the AFC North that the Ravens and the Browns would play twice a year, and so he's got a lot of experience playing in Cleveland. So I don't think he was really rattled by being on the road, and he's a veteran quarterback. And boy, he sure proved it last week. You know, Shane, it kind of had a really weird feeling in week two, very similar to what happened in week two of college football with all kinds of crazy upsets and bananas plays. We had a fight last weekend. We had multiple 20-point comebacks, this Jets game. I mean, it was really, really crazy in week two of the NFL.
Talk to me about that dust-up, because that took place in a match that Tom Brady finally ended his four-game losing run against the New Orleans Saints as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won an ill-tempered game, 20 points to 10.
Yes, ill-tempered, like the sea bass from Austin Powers, you know? you know, the Bucs were in New Orleans taking on my Saints, and it was a really, you know, low-scoring, kind of ugly football game, you know, kind of midway through the second half. And then Mike Evans, who plays receiver for the Bucs, and Marshawn Lattimore, a defensive back for the Saints, they have a history with each other. Lattimore kind of lives rent-free in Mike Evans' head. He does a pretty good job of shutting him down. And there was just some words exchange on the field, and Mike Evans ran on and cheap-shotted Marshawn Lattimore, and Evans got ejected, Lattimore got ejected. And really, from there, Tampa Bay just dominated the rest of the game. And give them all the credit in the world. They forced a bunch of turnovers, and New Orleans didn't play well. And so, yeah, so Brady snaps his, you know, four-game regular season losing streak, to the Saints. And so they improved to 2-0. And importantly, they have wins, a win over Dallas and a win over New Orleans. And so when you get to kind of like playoff seedings and stuff like that, a tiebreak, one of the first tiebreakers is, you know, wins against your conference. And so they're both in the NFC. All three of those teams are in the NFC. So that could be big down the line when you get to playoff seeding. And I know it's weird to start talking about that type of stuff, you know, just through 2 weeks. But, I mean, that's, you know, that's what you have to do.
Absolutely. Like, we are only at the start of the NFL season, Shep. But at the same time, Major League Baseball is winding down. And Yankee star Aaron Judge is tied with the legendary Babe Ruth.
Yeah, so Judge has had a phenomenal season. He's in contention. He may not be able to pull it off, Shane, but he's in contention to win what they call in Major League Baseball the Triple Crown. You would lead your league in batting average, home runs, and runs batted in, okay, the main three, you know, hitting categories. And but he's been, I mean, he's just been on an unbelievable streak all season long. And he hit his 60th home run of the year on Tuesday night, which tied him with Babe Ruth, and puts him one behind Roger Maris, who for, you know, 50-something years led, you know, all of Major League Baseball with 61 home runs total. So if he hits another one before the end of the season, he would, you know, tie Maris. If he hits two, he would now have the American League record. I think what's interesting is, you know, we live in such a world now where, you know, as soon as anything of significance happens, a player hands people gloves, or, you know, you catch a basketball or some shoes or something like that. People want to go put it on, you know, eBay and go sell it or something like that. Well, the guy who caught the ball Tuesday night didn't want to do that. He returned it to Judge. And so Aaron Judge brought him and three of his buddies into the Yankees locker room and took a bunch of pictures with him and signed balls and signed a bat for the kid. And it was just nice to see, like, no, all he wanted to do was just get the guy the ball back. It was actually refreshing. And you don't see that a lot, especially in New York.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, well, you see plenty of refreshing scenes in Jets games, and just for balance and all, so no one accuses me of bias, the New York Giants defeated the Carolina Panthers 19-16, but this is a Giants free zone for the next few weeks. Shep, on that refreshing note of a baseball story, we have to leave our chat there. You're an absolute gentleman, pleasure as always. Chatting, we are going to be chatting to Greg Allen, who's live at Dromoland Castle on day one of the Women's Irish Open in a few moments' time, so stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Golf.
Now, the Women's Irish Open Day 1 took place today at Dromoland Castle. I'm delighted to say Greg Allen joins us now live from County Clare. And Greg, only one place to begin. Leona Maguire, 3 birdies in the last 4 holes, including a birdie on the 18th. Has Leona just a couple of shots off the lead?
Yeah, and she's exactly where she wants to be. She wants to be in contention. It didn't get off to a particularly good start for her. She was only about 25 feet from the flag on the first, but she was above the hole, and she tried to play a really delicate bladed chip, deliberately bladed chip, which is a real delicacy of a golf shot. It didn't come off. Took a bogey in the first. There was a birdie in the third, but there was another bogey in the fifth. So suddenly, on a day of really good scoring, it was calm, it was mild, the course was soft, the greens were great. She was one over after 5. Then she reeled off 3 birdies in a row, 6, 7, and 8. And then another, obviously, great finish, as you've referred to there, 3 birdies in the last 4 holes. And by the time she reached the turn, she'd holed over 72 feet of putts. By the time she tapped in a 3-footer on 18, it was well over 100 feet of putts. So there's no doubt that there was one club in her bag which saved her today. But there's a good reason for that. She only flew over from the LPGA event last weekend at Portland, Oregon, 8 time zones away. She only came in on Monday. So I think she was pretty relieved to shoot around a 67, 5 under par, 2 shots off the lead.
Yeah, it was a little scrappy in places today. Didn't drive the ball as well as I would have liked, but putted really nicely. The greens actually were rolling really well considering the rain and everything, and an afternoon tea time. So yeah, just rolled it really well today. Nice to, I took advantage of the shorter holes, and you really have to take advantage of those few coming in. So nice to finish off with 3 birdies in the last 4 for some good momentum tomorrow.
So you've come 8 time zones to get here, and obviously getting off to a start like that is almost a bonus. But from your own point of view, energy levels, are they all good? Are they right it today?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I think shooting under par helps. Trying to do my very best this week, going to bed early, trying to get up early, and not still quite sure what time it is or where I am, but we'll be good by the weekend, that's it.
Well, that's the most important thing, because we need the crowds to come through the gates for this first Irish Women's Open in 10 years, and to have a world-class player is the first time that's ever happened in the history of the Irish Women's Open. There have been 15 stagings. This is the 15th staging since 1994. There have been great winners in the past. Laura Davis has won this title. Suzanne Pedersen has won this title. Sophie Gust has won this title. So, you know, to have Leona Maguire's name on that trophy come Sunday would be a huge thing, and hopefully the crowds will come through the gates. So just to give you the scoreboard, at the moment, Alexandra Swain of the US Virgin Islands, a former student at the University of Clemson, she's around a 65, and she's tied for the lead with Sweden's Lena Boqvist, also around a 65, so they're 7 under. 3 women on 6 under: Annabelle Dimmock of England, Clara Spilkova of the Czech Republic, and Annalise Caudal of France. They're all on 6 under par, and then tied for 6th place, just 2 off the lead, Leona Maguire with that round of 67, 7 birdies in there. Christine Wolff, incidentally, of Austria, also in that group on 5 under. I mentioned her because she pulled her trolley all the way around. No caddy. There's not much money on this tour, really, by comparison to obviously the richest that are there on the European Men's Tour, or the LPGA Tour, the PGA Tour, and of course the other tour, which obviously has gazillions on it. And just to mention of Aideen Walsh, the Ennis school teacher, she shot around a 71, 1 under par, 17 pars, followed by a birdie on her final hole. A 17-foot putt goes down for the birdie on the final green. She played with Solheim Cup player Caroline Hedvall, who also shot a 71, and she also played with Manon de Roy of Belgium, who's currently 4th on the Ladies European Tour Order of Merit with a win under her belt, and she shot a 74. It was a huge day for Aideen Walsh.
I hit it pretty solid, so I was really happy with the score, and I kept the nerves at bay, even though the front nine I was really nervous, but got more into it than the back nine. I was a bit more relaxed.
And that being relaxed, obviously, you know, an amateur playing in a pro event is going to feel some nerves, but just what is it like to be rubbing shoulders with professionals who do this for a living? And you are, you know, making a living, but as a teacher.
Yeah, it's like so cool. Like, I was really lucky that my two playing partners were really, really nice. So I played with Caroline, who played Solheim Cup.
Caroline Hedvall.
Exactly. And Manon, who's had a great year. She won in Bangkok in May. So it is such a great experience for us amateurs to learn from them. and try and take it to her own game then.
So that's Aideen Walsh, a round of 71. And just to give you some more context for that, the European LET Order of Merit leader at the moment, Lynn Grant, the woman who won the Scandinavian Mixed event, which is a co-sanctioned event on the LET and the European Tour, and she only won that by 9 strokes, Lynn Grant. Lynn Grant also shot a round of 1 under par 71.
Good stuff. Greg Allen, thank you very much. I'm sure Marie Crow will be checking in with Greg on tomorrow evening's show. And just for more information on Aideen Walsh, Ed Leahy actually has a really good interview on the RT Sport website, because Aideen is based in Ennis, and when not practicing golf, she teaches English to Ukrainian children at school Creasht Rí, having relocated from Lucan in Dublin, where she was able to avail of the excellent facilities of Golf Ireland at Carton House. So Walsh, one of 5 Irish amateurs competing at the Irish Open, so we'll be interested to see how it goes, and hopefully Leona Maguire continues her good run, and she's still in contention tomorrow. Marie is back tomorrow from 6 p.m. as I mentioned, but do stay tuned to 2FM this evening, because Tara Kumar is up next. A big thank you to our BCO this evening, Laura Lee Davis, and our producer Ronan Lawler, and indeed to you for keeping us company on this Thursday evening. From all of the Game On team, well, it's bye for now.